Marcus, sorry I haven't gotten back to your email yet on coordinating on work on the spec. I will get back to it eventually. I just I'm behind. But yeah, your help would be greatly appreciated in reviewing the spec and you know, any work that you can find time to do to help us would be fantastic. Yeah, and Greg, I guess this I'm going to try and find some time to work on the test suite, but I think we're getting pretty close to needing something up for people to implement against. We'll go against. We'll talk about it a bit more in the call, but I think the algorithm sections, I think, well, hopefully we only have about a week more of work in it to clean up the language for our first cut at implementations.
Yeah, I'm thinking that we can leverage the mechanism that's in there. It's not working now, but
yeah.
without this, just for sort of replace the Sparkle with this string compare.
Yep. Yeah, so I need to spend some time to hack on that Python.
We probably shouldn't. I think I associated with each of the test cases the type of test case it was, which would still allow for Sparkle test cases, but presumably that would be just for a small subset.
Right. Yep. Morning, Ted.
Good day.
I agree with what you said in IRC about the adding something to this doc to make it a little more apparent what should be in the content type header.
By the way, Mono, what is the JSON emergency break discussion?
Which one? Oh.
In RDFA.
Did that just get sent out to the mailing list?
It was Thomas Steiner's response to your agenda as number 5.
Hold on 1 second. Is that on a public mailing list? I guess it's the question I'm asking. Okay. Tom Steiner has stepped down as editor of the RDF JSON spec because he believes that the RDF working group should be standardizing around JSON LD and not necessarily RDF JSON. So that is a pretty big nod in our direction, which is nice, but they need the RDF working group still needs to figure out whether or not they want to listen to that advice.
Another comment that came through on RDF comments today towards JRON actually, but against the RDF JSON, and I've seen that within the RDF working group it seems to be coming up towards some discussion of a first working draft or something.
Yeah, let me see. I'm not seeing that on the.
My worry that I was going to mention on the call was that we get into a similar situation with microdata where the tag eventually notices that there's two different ways to do the same thing, and we shouldn't do that.
Yep. Yeah, and there's been some discussion off list about that concern, and I think we're just trying to figure out what the best way forward is, and I think that your concern is one of the concerns that I raised, saying, look, you know, JSON LD supports all of the use cases that RDF JSON does. It's probably going to end up confusing people in the same way that RDFA and microdata confuse people if we keep going down this route. Various people that either agree or disagree with that take on the situation. So we'll just have to see. All right, who do we have on the call? Whoops. All right, so are there any changes or updates to the agenda, anything that we want to discuss? Marcus, I think you had two items that you wanted.
Yeah.
Okay. And Marcus, we're getting I think we're getting a decent bit of feedback from your microphone, just background noise. Oh, is it okay if we mute you?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, or you can mute yourself, either way.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I guess it's right after you're muted. At what point in the discussion would you like to discuss your two items, Marcus? Beginning of the call, middle of the call, end of the call? Okay, at any point. Well, let's see. Let's go ahead and try discussing it at the beginning of the call then, because we might be able to get through it kind of quickly. All right, so I'm trying to find your email. Do you have a link to your email, Marcus? Oh, actually, I think I have one. Yeah, here we go. I got it. So I guess the first item up is the supporting null. Null in JSON-LD. So I had kind of responded to Marcus on the mailing list on why we don't necessarily, at least our reasoning for not supporting null just yet. And that basically boils down to, we use null to specify something that has been framed as not existing. So if somebody has something like, if they provide a frame and some JSON-LD input, and they provide a an input frame, and they say all of these elements must be specified in the output frame. So for example, if they list FOF homepage, and half of the data has FOF homepage and the other half doesn't have FOF homepage, if we have an option in the framing algorithm to basically insert FOF homepage as null if it doesn't exist in the data. And the reason that we do it that way is so that people don't have to keep checking to see if the value exists or not as they're iterating over an array of these objects. So it's kind of to help programmers not have to put in a bunch of checks. They can basically just assume that the key is going to exist in the data that they get back, and the only thing that they have to check for at that point is null. So that's right now why we don't have null in there. The other thing is that in an RDF graph, it's kind of strange to say that a value is null, right? Either it exists or it doesn't exist. So I don't know, Marcus, if that's convincing to you, or if you feel pretty strongly that we should still have null, or if you're okay. I think in one of your emails you said that it would be okay if we define something like JSON-LD colon null and just have a value that's null. We could also pick, I think, RDF nil and XSI nil, I think, or RDF null and XSI null. Right, and I guess Marcus in IRC is saying, okay, but then you don't know if the value was null or if the triple was there. He also says that JSON colon null would be fine for him. Are there any other any other concerns about this? Are there any other, I guess, suggestions on other ways that we could solve this problem? Greg?
Yeah, I'm just thinking, in sort of keeping with the other ways we've done keywords in JSON-LD, we could use at null, for instance.
Hmm. Yeah, we could do that as well. I'm a bit hesitant to keep adding keywords to JSON-LD, but that's certainly...
Well, if you add some designated value, such as RDF nil or JSON nil,
mm-hmm.
or whatever, you've done that anyway.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Any other comments on which one of these would be most useful for people?
Wouldn't an empty array be effectively the same thing? It would be a property with no values.
Yeah, I'm wondering how that translates to code. So if you have that, then you check to see if you don't. You just assume that the property exists, and I guess you would try and iterate over the array. I don't know. That's also a bit tricky.
Well, you end up going to iterate over the array to get all of the values for a given attribute, and you can certainly easily check to see if that array is empty as well, in addition to an iteration step.
Hmm.
And it does seem to be consistent with the thought of being able to assert that there are no values.
Right. Well, I'm wondering if we. It doesn't seem. I don't know if Greg, are you leaning towards any particular solution right now, or is this something that we might want to just kick back to the mailing list and have a bunch of proposals go across the list? Because I feel
I guess I'm in agreement that the casting new keywords is something we should think about. Now, of course, there is the null keyword. Now, you were suggesting that it be used, I think, for this particular case. So you have something like fof:homename:null basically is asserting that there are no values for that attribute. It seems to me to be semantically equivalent to fof:homepage:empty:set or empty array.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we could just say that a value that's null, that has null, doesn't exist. It doesn't translate to a triple, right?
Or null could be syntactic sugar for an empty list, too.
Right. Okay. And Mark's just saying it's not the same. Having a value be null is not the same as it not existing. So, yeah, Greg, I mean, you might be right. It might be just empty... object.
Well,
although it's not an empty. Sorry,
saying that it's not the same as a non-existent triple. So having an empty array actually does result in a non-existing triple. The equivalent in Sparkle or Turtle would be RDF nil, which is it's the empty sequence, which is commonly used in cases like this. So in which case perhaps. Null in JSON could be our equivalent for that, which in an RDF mapping might go to RDF nil.
Okay.
The question that is sort of here is, what's the point of this value? In database world, a null is a special thing, and it is not the same as an empty cell or a cell with no value. The empty cell has a meaning. A null is usually undefined.
Right. And Dave Longley is saying in IRC that the word null would also occur in the object position like foo as a string, which is like a microsyntax, and it would require escaping to actually use that as a string value. Not that may we, you know, we expect many people to use that as a string value. So yeah, and Ted, I mean, your concern is basically what's the use case for this?
Yeah.
And I don't
think it's going to be application specific. I think in some cases the nominal empty set is correct. In some cases, the database null is correct.
Right. Yeah. So I'm a bit hesitant to put in support for null just yet, just because there are multiple different ways that it could be used. Maybe we should just push this off onto the mailing list again. And Marcus, if you wanna propose a couple of things on the mailing list, I think that would be good. Mainly because there's so many different ways that we could treat null. I don't think it's a straightforward thing on whether or not we support null or not, because different people are going to need it for different things. Right now we use null specifically in the framing stuff. If we add in this other way of interpreting null, then we're going to have to think a bit more deeply about how that affects framing and whether your frame actually didn't find an attribute or it found an attribute and its value was something like RDF nil. If the JSON-LD interprets null coming in an input document as RDF nil, then the output is going to be the empty array, and we've got this round-tripping issue, right? So you pull something in as null, and then you put it out as an empty list. And then if we do that, then we have to pull in RDF list. So I feel like it's kind of an avalanche of issues that happens if we support RDF, if we support null, or if we claim that it is one thing and not the other. So Marcus, would you mind thinking a bit more about it and just kind of pushing it back to the mailing list? And then IRC, Marcus is saying that's fine, so that's good. Okay, all right, so let's go ahead and move on to the next topic. And that's arrays as ordered lists or unordered sets. So it's in the same email that Marcus brought up. So arrays as ordered lists or unordered sets. And Marcus, would you mind kind of giving us some background and your thinking on why ordered lists and not unordered sets for arrays? And feel free to unmute yourself and talk. It's the background noise isn't that terrible. Yeah, just barely.
Okay. I would think to we should file JSON-LD more towards JSON, so filing it towards the directed graph model, because JSON is really what developers see, and they don't really see the underlying data model accuracy.
So one concern that I have is Richard Saganiak just talked about this concept. He just minted a new term called the triple tar pit, which is basically a set of triples that expresses exactly what you want, but working with it is incredibly difficult, or working with those triples are incredibly difficult. And people that work in RDF don't... I see very little use of lists in RDF. And that might just be because of the type of data that we're working with. But what we're talking about is we're going to take what the JSON folks are used to, which is an ordered list, and we're going to convert everything into an RDF list. So anything that has multiple properties is going to be an RDF list by default. There's going to be this order that's on it. And so there are multiple issues with doing that. The first one is that it makes the RDF data really kind of messy, right? It requires you to iterate over lists that are supposed to be just different properties. And what most people want to express in RDF is an unordered set of attributes for an object. So something like fofnick, the nicknames, you don't want the nicknames to be an ordered set. There's just a set of, you know, it's a variety of different nicknames. So if the JSON people are, that's the first point. The second point is if the JSON people want something that is an ordered list, they can continue to use it like an ordered list, right? There's nothing to prevent them from doing that. And if the RDF people want to export something in a way that the JSON people can depend on a specific order, for example, you know, alphabetical or sort order or whatever, all they need to do is they just need to normalize the graph and then compact it, I think. Dave Longley, please correct me if I'm wrong on that, but if you want to ensure that the JSON people keep working with something that's an ordered list, you can generate that in JSON-LD. So I guess the thing that I'm confused about is exactly which use case are we concerned of not addressing, right? I mean, if they're RDF people and they're working with RDF data, then they understand that this thing's an unordered set. And if they're JSON people working with JSON-LD, they don't need to understand anything about it. They just know that it's a list of data and they can process it as a list. And if those JSON people want it to be ordered in some way, then they can tell the REST web service or whoever's writing the REST web service that they depend on the data being ordered in some fashion and order it in that fashion when the JSON LD is output. So Dave Longley is saying that it's not necessarily that simple, that you don't know that the sort order will be based on the property and values that you want. But in that case, I mean, why can't the REST service just generate the JSON LD in an ordered list if the JSON developers want it to be in an ordered list? Or why isn't the REST API or the REST web service outputting it as a list anyway, if that's what they really want? So Marcus, I don't know if that any of those were convincing or.
Well, I think the question is really if you're biasing toward JSON developers or more toward RDF people.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, if you target it to JSON developers, we have all those round trip issues, and I think it's really difficult to figure out what went wrong if he just gets the array back in a completely different order.
So specifically, which round-tripping issues are you concerned about? Do you have an example?
Yeah, if you have a JSON-LD document and you store it in some triple store or somewhere, or you convert it to RDF for another web service and then you get the response back, or you get it again out of the triple store, your array will be in a completely different order normally.
Right, but why is that why is that important? Why is someone depending on the order of that array?
Because perhaps you write your API so that you expect that the array that will be returned will be the same as the one you sent, for example.
Right. I'm wondering what case that happens in, right? What's specific? Like, for example, they've got a recipe and they're expecting the recipe steps to be in a certain order, and they're not?
Yeah, for example, playlists that they are used quite often on the mailing list, for example, playlists of songs.
Okay. But in that case, then why isn't the web service ordering the recipe steps in an order? Basically, why isn't it outputting the JSON LD in a very specific order that the JSON developers can depend on, that list order? Right.
Yeah, I mean, right now we can do that, but it's more difficult if we do it that way than the other way around. That's my argument. So we should bias it more towards JSON developers so that in the normal case, it's ordered just as it is specified in the JSON spec. And if someone wants to have a set, then he has to add set attributors or something.
Okay. Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I think it sort of comes down to what the sweet spot that we're trying to optimize for. If the expectation is that almost always things are ordered, then lists are an appropriate way to deal with it. But if the expectation is that ordering is more the exception, then having a microsyntax that allows us to specify without really any other overt changes in the lexical mapping that this particular use of the array is going to be ordered seems to really fit that pretty well. So in the case of the recipe steps, for instance, I can either designate using a syntax that says this array is ordered, or I can put something in the coercion spec that basically says every use of that particular property is going to be an ordered list. And that's, I think, what the current spec does. It seems to me that really that is the appropriate side of the issue to come down on.
So you're basically saying the worldview currently is everything's an unordered set, and if it's not, you should specify that it's not in the coercion rules.
Either in the coerce section or in line. Now this is a common modeling problem, and we see it all the way through the schema.org examples. Their use of recipe examples, for instance, assumes an ordering because, of course, microdata in the JSON serialization does maintain order, but it did not in the now terminated RDF specification. So we see that a lot. And when they translate them, for instance, the data vocabulary use of that, when they translate it to RDF-A, they also make that same mistake of assuming that ordering is going to be consistent. So it is a reasonable consideration, but I think if JSON LD provides a simple way of being able to specify that, we can avoid those use cases a lot more easily.
Right. And I guess if we adopt the list keyword and syntax, then that would be one such solution to this problem, right? But I think, I guess Marcus's concern is that we should be doing unordered lists, ordered lists by default, not unordered sets by default.
Exactly, yeah, because we are based on JSON, and JSON quite clearly specifies that arrays are ordered.
Right.
Yeah, but the problem then is that as you mentioned, if you do ordering, then from the perspective of what it looks like in the underlying data model, it's going to be it's much more challenging to traverse.
Yeah, I mean, basically everything's going to end up turning. It's either people are going to end up putting. In their coerce rules, they're going to have to put set in for a number of RDF properties. The vast majority of RDF properties are going to have set associated with them. Otherwise, they're going to be turned into RDF lists. And if you're working with a triple store or a quad store or any kind of graph database, you're going to have this extra layer of kind of muck to go through to actually get to your data. So I guess in the RDF case, I agree with you, Marcus, that the thing that JSON developers are most used to are ordered lists. However, if we implement it in that way in the JSON-LD, then what the linked data people are going to have to work with are all of these lists that probably weren't intended to be lists in the first place. They were probably meant to be unordered sets, but somebody forgot to put it in the course rules and things like that. So I think basically what I'm saying is I think that an ordered list is an exception in RDF data, whereas in JSON data it's not necessarily an exception. So I agree with you that JSON people are used to ordered lists, but I don't think that should carry over into JSON-LD, right? Because the vast majority of data that people are going to be publishing, at least using JSON-LD, are not they're going to be sets of information. They're not going to be lists. Yeah, and as Dave Longley said in the channel, you know, keep in mind that JSON developers use arrays in ways where they don't really care about the order either, and that might be the average case there, right? Where they don't care about order, they just have an array of items and they iterate through it. And in fact, I mean, the vast majority of the code, at least that I write with JSON arrays, I don't think cares about the order. I just care that there's an array there, and I iterate through everything in the array and process it.
Would it be an option to kind of be able to overwrite the default behavior in a context document to decide, like, now I want that the default is arrays are ordered, or now the default is arrays are unordered sets?
Yeah, I mean that's an interesting question. I don't see why not. I mean you could add an option in to say that arrays are unordered sets by default or arrays are lists by default. And Dave Longley saying that you could put this in the context. Yeah, and I think I'd prefer it being an option. Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, I think one common pattern would be the case where there's only a single value that would not be serialized in an array, that as soon as there were multiple or no values, that would go towards an array type of specification. I think that would be the simplest thing. Now, it would mean there would be a little bit of extra work for someone to do to consume that if they were trying to properly deal with the order, in the case that they might be, when serializing anyway, have to either serialize as a list or as a single item, depending upon the length of the array. But I think that probably captures most people's meaning in those circumstances.
Could you summarize that, Greg? I don't feel like I fully understood what you were saying.
So an option, perhaps the normal way of serializing multiple values would be to use array notation, or rather a serialized list type notation, when there is anything other than one value. And if there is one value, then it would not be a list notation. It would simply be an attribute value pair.
I thought that's what we had today. I guess that's why I'm confused.
Well, if you specified that this property takes an array, right? Then you're using an array notation.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be able to serialize an array with one entry, zero entries, two entries, five entries.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was to serialize if there was a key with a single value which is in an array, then that would have to be a list with a single entry. But I guess that's what it is now, right? Because you don't need array notation unless you have more than one value.
Right.
But,
right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. Yep.
So I guess that's probably not necessary after all.
Okay. Well, I guess the takeaway from what you said though is that there could be an option to collapse arrays down into a single object if there is only one value.
But in thinking about it further, that probably isn't very useful it's easy enough for the programmer to specify that.
Right. Okay, if you specify. Okay, so I think, Marcus, I mean, I think the idea that you can specify what the default is if you want to generate RDF lists for everything or RDF sets for everything, I'd certainly be... That is something that I could see, you know, putting into the spec. I still disagree that the default should be lists by default. And Marcus is saying that he thinks it would combine the best of both worlds and approaches. Okay. All right. So how about Marcus? We'll push this to the mailing list, and we'll try to figure out language. We'll try to figure out how to get how to specify the default course. Rules for lists and unordered sets, but it looks like there are a number of people that agree with this approach, basically specifying in the context whether or not you want lists to be whether or not you want JSON arrays to be unordered sets by default, lists by default. Yeah, and Greg just put in a something that we could do. We could just do at list and then say array, or you know, have a set for the other one, or set notation. So I guess we could do, I'm going to type something in IRC. Yep, there we go. Okay, all right, so we'll go ahead and take a look at that and talk about it a bit more on the mailing list and see what we can do with that. Any other comments or concerns? Any other input? Okay, so we'll push that to the mailing list. All right, so let's see. Our next topic on the agenda is the algorithm spec language updates. Both Dave and I spent quite a bit of time over the past 3 weeks speccing out, basically creating language for the spec on how to implement these algorithms. And so the easy ones to do was the expand, compact, and framing algorithms. Those are fairly, they're not very involved. The normalization algorithm, if you've read it in the spec, is incredibly involved. It's a very, very difficult, algorithm, one to figure out and also to spec. So many kudos to Dave Longley for figuring out the normalization algorithm and implementing it and then going back through and cleaning up the language on the algorithm. I think we still have a bit of work that still needs to be done on it, but you can read over it now and kind of get a general idea of what the process is. This is just kind of a heads up for people that if you want to, you can read over the algorithm. I certainly wouldn't try to implement it right now because we need to go back through and clean up the language to make it a bit more clear about what's happening in each step. Any questions or comments on the algorithm spec language updates? And as Dave said in IRC, the source might be easier to follow than the English description. It's sometimes much more succinct and easier to understand, especially the JavaScript code, than it is to read through the algorithm and understand kind of what's going on. There's a lot of state information that follows the algorithm around as it's operating. All right. So the next item up are the API return values. So the other thing that was added to the specification was the basically the application programming interface, the API for a JSON-LD compliant API that you'd use in JavaScript or PHP or Python or Ruby. And the main issue that remained with the API was what to do when things went wrong, right? So I went to a bunch of the web apps and what WG people, the people that basically work on spec language, a lot of spec language for APIs, and asked them what's the best way, what the best thing to do when something went wrong. Is right. So the two pieces of feedback that they had was the first thing was if you're not getting your input from a user interface, if you're not getting an input from a text field or a box or one of those things, then more than likely you want to raise an exception when something goes wrong because it's a programmatic error. It's a developer created error. So the only time that you want to return null or the empty string is when you're dealing with data that is directly in from the browser, text field, selection box, those types of things. They also said that if you're designing an API from scratch, from the beginning, that the best thing to do is to just raise exceptions when things go wrong, especially if it's a programmer-related issue, right? So this comes up in the framing code. So when the developer provides a frame that is an invalid frame or has a wrong value of some kind, instead of returning null, they said we should raise an exception. So I believe that the API is going to be changed to, instead of returning null, it's always going to either give you back the frame data that you want or the data that you asked for, or it's going to raise an exception. So, for example, it failed to fetch the context due to CORS issues, or it failed to understand what you meant by the frame that was passed in. So, are there any feedback on the API? Marcus is doing a plus one for exceptions. Does anyone feel like we should be returning null or an empty string instead of raising an exception when something goes wrong? And Dave Longley is saying currently a return value of null from framing is a way of saying your frame didn't match your input. So we do use null for something different in the framing algorithm, basically to say that there were no matches. Okay. It doesn't seem like there's minus one for frame mismatch. Ted, what do you mean by minus one for frame mismatch?
Sorry, mute. Minus one for using null for that. If the frame doesn't match the input, well, I suppose it's a question of what does that mean.
Right.
If you should get no input. So if something's going wrong here, I'm not clear enough in my head on what the frame does.
Okay. Well, the two options are we return back an empty JSON object, which is, two curly brackets, open curly, close curly, or we return back null. And basically what
the empty data set, not
null. Okay. And Dave Longley might have stronger feelings on this than anyone else, since he's the one that initiated most of the framing code. And Dave is saying maybe the open and close curly could work. One of the reasons for doing null, Ted, is that it's a fairly easy check, right? You don't need to see if the object that you got back has any key value pairs. From a reasoning and kind of semantic, like what does the code mean, returning back an empty object makes more sense. But from a programmatic, from a programmer's perspective, checking for null probably makes more sense. Although
at that
I guess
level,
you could
check the length as what, 3 or 5 or something.
Yeah, they could do that. I mean, I guess you could also do the equivalence, you know, does the return object equal, you know, open curly bracket, close curly bracket. So you could do that as well, and that would be just as easy as checking for null.
That makes a lot more logical sense.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, then why don't we do that unless someone can figure out a reason that we shouldn't be doing that. Because I don't think that the difference in the code is just object triple equal null versus object triple equal, open curly bracket, close curly bracket. And if it makes more logical sense to do the latter, which I agree that it does, let's just change it to that. All right. Any objections to making that change to the API? Greg, you're on the queue.
Sorry, I meant to be plus one.
plus one. Okay. Okay, so you're in support of the curly brackets instead of null, and so is Marcus. All right. Well, then let's go ahead and do that. Dave Longley, do you have any preference? You said it could work, but are there any concerns that you have? Okay, so there may be a recursion issue with the way the framing code works. So, because null is used to specify that a property doesn't exist, is what Dave Longley is saying. Okay, so we'll go ahead and I guess Dave Longley is going to have to take a look at the framing code and tell us whether or not it's gonna work out. Because we may use null and the object in different ways to specify different things. But if there is no issue, then we can go ahead and make the change if there is no issue. Does that work for you, Ted?
I suppose it's going to have to. And depending on what issues surface. Yeah. Depending on what issue surface, I would hope that the other issue might be resolved another way.
Okay, I got you. So you want to keep the logical consistency on the surface, and then if the implementation has to jump through more hoops to get it right, you'd rather that than have a kind of a logical inconsistency on the surface.
Yeah, because I think null is just the wrong response here.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, maybe Dave Longley can take a look at it and then report something back to the mailing list after he's figured out whether or not this is something that can be done. It should be, right? But some of these things are tricky when you get down into them. All right. Anything else on this topic before we move on? All right, so the last item is the INMIME type registration. And let me get a... So there was a... I added a section to the spec that is about INA considerations. So basically this is what we would submit to register the JSON LD MIME type. And it's basically all the way at the bottom of the spec. And so the type name is application, the subtype name is LD plus JSON. I went into a bit of detail on why those names were picked, and this was after consulting with a number of people on what WG and IETF, and they all of them felt that this was the right thing to do, the LD plus JSON. It follows in the footsteps of the plus XML designators for all of the XML, basically MIME formats on the web. And there is also there are a couple of vendor-specified JSON formats out there as well. And the way you're supposed to specify that the subtype of the language is doing a plus JSON. And so since this is JSON LD, you know, the primary type is linked data, and it's linked data encoded in JSON. So hopefully I think everyone on the, nobody seemed to have an issue with that on the mailing list. The other bit that we had discussed were these optional parameters. So how do you know whether or not a JSON LD document in compacted form or expanded form or frame form or normalized form? So we added this optional parameter that you can put in an HTTP header that either in the HTTP request, it tells you what output format you want. Or if somebody doesn't specify the output format, when you return the data back to them, you can put in the content type HTTP response header, whether or not the data is compacted, expanded, framed, or normalized. We had also talked about a context form, so whether or not the JSON data is a context document, JSON LD context, or whether it's an actual JSON LD document. And that, I think, is still a bit up in the air because, well, there are concerns. Are there any, and we'll get to those concerns in a bit, but are there any basic concerns about the IANA MIME type registration?
So, Mano, could you, just to be clear, perhaps type out an example of using it with the form?
Sure.
How you would deal with a document, which was a framed document itself.
Okay. The framing stuff is that's one of the problems that we have right now that we need to discuss, and the other one is how to specify a context document. So let's just do a simple example where you're hitting a REST web service for a compacted document. HTTP request would have content type, application, LD plus JSON, semicolon form equals compacted. So I think that's what we would do right now. So the content type is application slash LD plus JSON, and then semicolon, and then form equals compacted. So that's basically telling the HTTP web service that you want an application LD plus JSON document, and you would like that document in its compacted form. And then in order to generate the compacted form, you just follow the compaction algorithm in the JSON LD spec. And then the response from the REST web service would be the same thing. You should get the same thing back. So content type application slash LD plus JSON semicolon form equals compacted. I don't think that the web service, so I don't know if we should specify whether or not the web service has to return the form that you ask it to return. Greg, you're on the queue.
Wouldn't the request header have an accept form of rather than a content type? Because content type would be
I'm sorry.
For data
you're right.
Submitted.
Yep, you're absolutely right. So it would have that, I guess, as the primary one that it would want back, right? And then the web service could just ignore it. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Yes, yeah, so the request would be accept application / JSON LD plus JSON semicolon form equals compacted, and then the response should be if the web service gives you back what you asked for, the content types application / it's the same thing application JSON LD plus JSON form compacted. So there are a couple of issues with this, right? One of them is how we do framed form. And then the other one is how we specify whether or not a document is a context document or not. So let's do the framed discussion first. There are a couple of ways that we could solve the framing issue. One of them is basically the input to the framing algorithm, you have to give it a JSON LD input and you have to get it a frame, or you have to give it a frame. It requires those two pieces of information. So you can't, and the frame can be a fairly large JSON object. It doesn't have to be this tiny compact thing. It's not just like you're passing an IRI. You're passing a JSON blob. Both of them are JSON blobs. So when you, let's say that a web service is supposed to be able to frame data, the question is, what are you going to send that web service, right? So are you going to send the web service an accept header that says application LD plus JSON semicolon form equals framed, and then are you going to then post data that has an array with two items in it, the first item being the JSON LD input and the second item being the frame, right? That's one way to solve the problem. The other way to solve the problem is to stuff the frame into the IRI. So when you make a call to the web service, you say frame equals, and then you URL encode this gigantic text blob, which could be, 32K, 65K, 120K in size for a ridiculously complex example, but you could end up doing that. Or the other way, the other approach would be to provide the frame out of band. So you make a call to the web service. You would say, I want, that you would do an accept header, you would say application / LD plus JSON semicolon form equals framed, and then you would put a link header as well in there that would point to the frame that you want to use. And then the body of the post is just going to be the JSON LD input. Now the problem with that approach is that not everyone is going to be able to publish their frames on the web. Right, so if you put the link header there, the assumption is that you are also publishing all of your frames, and the idea might be that these frames need to be dynamically generated, and therefore the link header is probably not going to work out very well for some people. So Marcus is saying that he doesn't like the idea of passing the frame IRI out of band. And that could lead to a denial of service attack or a server, because it's cheap to force a server to go download a huge amount of data. And I completely agree with that. So it looks like the link header is problematic for a variety of reasons. URL encoding it is problematic. Mainly because it seems kind of hackish to stuff everything into the IRI. It might be something that we want to support as an option, but then again, it might be something. I mean, for example, like OAuth allows you to specify parameters in the IRI or in the link or in the HTTP headers. And while that's nice, it also really complicates the implementations, because you have to look in both places for every single call. So it might be that we want to specify what a web service should should take as input when you're trying to frame data. And the simplest thing would be an array of two JSON objects where the first thing is the JSON-LD input and the second thing is the frame. Are there any thoughts on which direction people would like to see this go in?
I'm sorry, Mona, could you provide an example of that last?
Sure. So the so I'm suggesting that a web service that provides framing takes, allows, and accept header of application LD plus JSON, semicolon, form equals framed, and then takes, and then I guess it, and the and then I guess the HTTP mode must be a post with a JSON document that's an array JSON, let's see, JSON, with the JSON LD document, the JSON LD input, and the JSON LD frame. So, where those objects would be the JSON LD input and the JSON LD frame. Marcus is saying, currently posting both docs to the web service seems to be the best option in my opinion. But you can't cache it then, which is true. Right, and Dave Lane is saying that we want that to work for GET as well. And I guess you can send a body of the document in the GET call. Greg, you're on the queue.
Well, you're not always going to be specifying the document in line to be return framed. In fact, given a JavaScript implementation, you probably are never going to need to do that. More likely, you're going to be requesting a resource and wanting it to be framed using the frame document that you specify perhaps in post data. But I don't know that you're going to always have to specify both the frame document and the source document to be framed.
Yeah, that's true. I guess the reason this actually came up is because we're trying to make the test suite work nicely, right?
So another thought on that is, one, we haven't discussed what the MIME type of the frame document is. But if that was the case, then why not do multi-part post rather than making something up.
Okay. Well, that's definitely an option. So yeah, I mean, maybe we should go back and try and understand what the use case for this really is. I know in the test suite, we definitely need to be able to make a web service call, but maybe that's just what an implementation has to do to be valid with the test suite. So we may not need to spec this. We may not need to spec this at all, and instead we could just say, if you want to comply with the JSON LD test suite, then you have to implement, you know, this multi-part post or whatever. Okay. So Ted is saying plus one for a more clearly defined use case. And making the test suite easy is not the best argument for the spec design. And I agree. And we're at the top of the hour, so we should probably shut down the call. So we should have a little more discussion on this on the mailing list. All right, any other concerns, anything we should be aware of over the next 2 weeks? All right. Thank you, everyone, for the call, and have a great weekend, and we'll continue these discussions on the mailing list. Bye.
right.